44 years ago, in 1981, Bobby Sands, the IRA's leader in the Maze prison outside Belfast, starved himself to death. The 27-year-old was part of a cohort of Irish Republicans imprisoned in the UK. They claimed as political prisoners. This difference between criminals and political prisoners was at the very heart of their protest. And Sands' death, many argue, was a historic watershed that paved the way for the IRA's political wing, Sinn Féin, to become the largest party on the island today. There has not been a prisoner hunger strike on this scale since, until, activists say, today.
I was admitted into hospital with dehydration and starvation ketoacidosis, with my ketone at 5.7.
I don't know what ketone actually is.
So basically, ketone is the acid in your body, right? This acid breaks down and eats the glucose, and eventually when there is no glucose left, you get glucose from like carbs and eating. When there is nothing left, then that acid starts to eat your muscles and then it will eat your organs.
Right.
So it's basically your body eating itself, and that's the primary function of the ketone acid once there is no glucose left in your system. And so healthy body would be like 0 point something for ketone level, whereas obviously mine was 5 point something, which was completely in the critical and danger zone.
On today's show, for the first time, you will hear the voice of Tuta Hoxha speaking to MEE Live via an intermediary from HMP Peterborough on week 6 of her hunger strike. 8 UK prisoners are hunger striking while awaiting trial for alleged criminal damage on behalf of Palestine Action. This was before the group was banned under terrorism legislation. 5 of them have spent periods in hospital as a result of this strike. All are being held on remand, meaning they have not been convicted of any crime, but have been denied bail ahead of trial. The charges they face revolve around 2 Palestine Action raids, one on an arms factory owned by Elbit Systems, Israel's largest weapons company, and the other at the RAF base Bryce Norton. The activists characterise this as direct action against companies implicated in the genocide in Gaza, and the inmates are among 32 people detained without trial over these events. The hunger strikers' demands include bail and a fair trial, but they also call for the deprescription of Palestine Action, which was banned under terrorism legislation in July. That ban is now under review by 3 High Court judges, with a verdict expected in the coming weeks. For a moment, let's talk about what a hunger strike actually means. In the first few days without food, the body burns through whatever glucose it has stored. That's also when the usual hunger pangs hit, and they usually fade after a couple of days. By weeks 1 to 3, the body shifts into fat-burning mode, ketosis. This is when it starts using stored fats as its main fuel source. After about week 4, things get dangerous. The body begins breaking down muscle and even organs to keep itself going. With the Palestine Action hunger strikes, that's where we're at right now. Collectively, they have been striking between 6 and 38 days, but most have crossed the 4-week stage. And Hoxha, who speaks in this episode, has entered week 6. The final phase of hunger strikes is full starvation. At this point, the risk of death is extremely high, even for someone with no underlying medical issues. Bobby Sands died on his 66th day. We asked Tuta Hoxha, why hunger strike, and how far are you willing to go?
To be honest, it's the only thing that I felt that I could do within prison. Mm-hmm. And I just felt like, you know, I was continuing to watch what's going on in Gaza. And at every single level, there has been such contempt for protesters and corruption by the state in how this case has been managed, in how we have been treated. You know, just seeing all these institutions working together to mute the crimes that they're all complicit in, and they've made us, by association, complicit in. I always say that being called a terrorist when it comes to, like, you know, the legal system in the UK, that's akin, in my view, to being given the death penalty. That's the closest thing to being given the death penalty. It's to have that autonomy over the state and to say that even though they have labeled us with this thing, which to me is akin to the death penalty or the closest thing we have to the death penalty, it's not stopped us and it's not scared us because we value human life over state corruption. This is the only thing I feel that I can do from inside prison. And how far am I willing to go? Well, I either leave the prison walking or in a wheelchair. I'm prepared to go the full way to achieve our rights as British citizens.
The activists say this is the biggest coordinated prisoner hunger strike since Bobby Sands led IRA prisoners in 1981. In that strike, 10 prisoners died. Looking back, BBC News called it the hunger strike that changed the course of Northern Ireland's conflict. Historic. But if what we're seeing now is history as it happens, you wouldn't know from the coverage. The BBC has published one standalone piece about the hunger strikes just yesterday, so several weeks in. The article did not name the arms company at the centre of the protest, Elbit Systems. It also stated that the protesters, whose demands include the right to a fair trial, have faced, quote, the same legal process as other defendants in Crown Court trials. Hoxha shared her thoughts on the media's response. At one point in this clip, the call is cut as the prison's time limit is reached. But the caller, who's asking questions on our behalf, reconnects.
I've heard about the, you know, very lackluster and late media reports. From what I was read, especially the line where it's like they have been exposed to the same criminal procedures as other prisoners. Well, no, because other prisoners do not get held for over a year on remand. And I don't remember him writing that, you know, the length of time we've already stayed in prison for. And that bit of information, you know, adds a lot of weight and context. But again, I don't expect anything from an organization that has remained, you know, quote-unquote, impartial when it comes to a genocide, if they've even bothered to, you know, cover it. And I guess they'd be the first to cover hunger strikers in another country, not here. Yeah, I mean, our lives are on the line. It's been over a month. I don't think people understand what not eating for a month means.
Yeah, I've
Can I pull back? Because it's 20 minutes, it's going to cut off.
Okay.
You know, people don't understand what not eating for a month means. It's, you know, not only are we having to deal with the malnutrition that we're feeling, the breathlessness, hospitalization, the fatigue, and these are just the mild symptoms. We're having to also comprehend around day 35, you know, organ failure, brain damage, having to, you know, think about ICUs and essentially having to write a will, even though the intention is never death or suicide. It's about life and wanting to live and wanting, you know, autonomy, just holding onto that autonomy and holding a mirror up to these corrupt institutions.
We're now joined by two representatives of the group mobilising this action, Prisoners for Palestine. Audrey Corno and Francesca Nadin have both been remanded in UK prisons themselves for pro-Palestine activism. Welcome to the show. Audrey, you've been making regular calls and visits to those inside. Can you give us the latest update on their physical and mental health?
Yes, for sure. Hi, thank you so much for having us. So the latest updates are quite upsetting to hear. As far as we know, Cameron is currently still in hospital and hasn't been able to make any communications with his family and loved ones. He was sent to hospital because he wasn't able to stay steady on his own two feet. And as you can imagine, in his now fifth week of hunger striking, his fatigue and general deterioration has meant that he has needed to go to hospital. I visited T. Hoxha yesterday, and she is also having a very difficult time. I can see the discoloration on her skin. Her eyes are sunken in. She takes a lot more time to stand up and to walk around, just due to the exhaustion and starvation, frankly. John is in really bad shape as well. also moving very slowly, very dizzy. I'm also very concerned about Umar. Umar is the latest hunger striker to have joined, but because of his muscular dystrophy condition, has seen his ketone levels rise faster and to higher levels than all the other hunger strikers, and has received hardly any medical attention from the prison, has been refused flat-out medical attention and hospital since last night. So all the hunger strikers are currently in a very precarious health condition, and I'm very worried about how much longer they can hang on.
Thank you for the update. Francesca, just talk us through the demands that these hunger strikers have. What is the point of all of this?
So there are five demands. And the first thing to say is that they're all very reasonable demands that any so-called democracy would give automatically to its citizens. So first of all, no censorship within the prison. There's been a recurrent theme of censorship, and this is all based around this label of terrorism, the perfect excuse to give them worse treatment than any of the other prisoners due to their political views. And, of course, immediate bail. So there is a bail hearing tomorrow for three of the hunger strikers who've already been in prison for quite a long period of time, with, again, very spurious justifications from the judges and the British state. Then we have the right to a fair trial. So, yeah, if we're talking about democratic rights, this is absolutely not happening to them due to the political motivation of these charges, of this imprisonment. We can talk about all these undisclosed meetings that have been happening between Elbit Systems, this arms company that's operating over here, between Israeli officials, between various different British state actors. From the little information we have, which we're sure is the tip of the iceberg, we know that they've been sharing information about activists, about these specific cases. So how can there be a fair trial with this political interference? It's impossible. Number four is to deprescribe Palestine action. So, of course, these people, these prisoners were arrested and imprisoned before the prescription. However, they've still been given this label of terrorist. So from what we can see, this is a coordinated witch hunt, which is the result of all these undisclosed meetings, which is a result of the British government in collusion with Israel, with Elbit Systems, of maintaining their profits and continuing the genocide. So we cannot separate these two issues. And number five, of course, to shut Elbit down on British soil.
Now, some of these demands that you've listed, they seem more achievable than others. For example, being granted bail, compared to the demand to shut down Elbit Systems or the demand to deprescribe Palestine action. You know, can we see the government taking these measures because of a hunger strike? And so the question that leaves in my mind is that the only thing that will get them to stop? You know, would they potentially stop their hunger strike if some of their demands were met, if free trial, if bail was granted? Or is it going to really hinge on shutting down Elbit Systems and deprescribing Palestine action?
So I think the thing to understand here is that there is a huge campaign of many different types happening right now in this country, whether that be civil disobedience, from Defend Our Juries, whether that be the judicial review of the prescription of Palestine action. And there's just an understanding that there has to be many different kinds of resistance in order to achieve these goals, which is justice and freedom for the people that shouldn't be in prison, freedom for the Palestinian people as well. So it's not as simple to say that just because of a hunger strike, all these demands will be met. This is just one part of an uprising of the British people who will not accept what the British state is doing in our name.
Now, it's worth reiterating that all of those hunger striking were charged before Palestine Action was prescribed as a terrorist organisation. However, they have said that they are being treated like terrorists. And earlier on the show, we looked at the BBC's coverage, which, as well as being minimal, contested the prisoners' demands that you've just listed for us, Francesca, by stating that their treatment is the same. They've gone through the same legal process as other Crown Court defendants. Now, Hoxha responded that by pointing out that many of those hunger striking have already been in prison for a year. And for some, their trials are not scheduled until January 2027. That could mean years in prison with no charge. Many people might not realise how unusual it is that the UK even allows this. You both have been remanded. Audrey, having been held in remand yourself, can you just lay out for us and share what you think people watching need to understand about the UK's practice of detention without trial and just how unusual this is?
Yeah, absolutely. So being held on remand, just as you explained, is only meant to be done in exceptional circumstances when someone cannot have the, you know, quote unquote, risk of reoffending managed through bail conditions, which is usually what happens, or if they are such a threat to public safety that they cannot be trusted to be let out into the community. Now, neither of these things have been done or are true of the hunger strikers or of any of the prisoners for Palestine. And I don't know if it's included in the recording that you have of Hoxha, but, you know, the only other cases in which people are held on remand for this long without any charge is when people are accused of murder, when people are accused of, like, violent crimes. Whereas all that the prisoners for Palestine are alleged, their only crime that they're accused of is trying to put a stop to a genocide. So we can see how political this is. And the other link I think that is really important to make is that I am in no way trying to compare the two situations, but we can see the links and how British imperialism works, that the practice of administrative detention in Palestine, where the Israeli military will detain Palestinians without charge for years. Where did that practice come from? That practice comes from Britain. And we are seeing activists being held on remand in prison without charge for supporting Palestine.
Now, presumably, though, when there are injustices faced in prison, as you're claiming is the case, there are formal complaints procedures that prisoners can use to improve the situation. Audrey, I'm going to come back to you in a second, but Francesca, can you just talk us through whether those formal procedures were explored before resorting to a hunger strike?
Anyone who's had any experience with the prison system will tell you the same thing, that these complaint systems are just for show, really. They're completely inadequate. It's just a waste of time, Anybody who's been there will tell you that. So, yes, there's been various instances in which the prisoners have made complaints about these things, and the result has been hardly any change at all. But this goes way beyond the treatment in prison. Of course, we have to talk about that. But let's talk about the wider demands. Why are they in prison in the first place? Why is Britain still exporting arms to Israel? Why is this political interference in the trial? This is not just about prison conditions. It's much bigger than that. And this is a threat not just to the people in prison, but to everybody who's out supporting the pro-Palestine movement in general. As you know, there are doctors and nurses that have been harassed by the Israel lobby. They've been suspended, lost their licenses, professors at university, students being kicked out of university for simply making speeches at marches. So this is just indicative of the wider political repression that's happening right now. And I think T. Hoxha put it perfectly herself, that they are the punching bag of the prescription.
And now, Audrey, I think the same could be said for these methods of protest, as can be said for the method of hunger striking. You know, there are easier ways to get a message across, ways that won't get you in trouble with the law in terms of protesting. You yourself have been engaged in the kind of activism that is at the heart of this issue. Why resort to this type of direct action, given the risk it carries?
Sorry, just for my clarification, do you mean taking direct action, like against Elbit Systems, for example, or do you mean the Hamas?
Yeah, so I suppose if we look at the two incidents that underpin all of the 32 people remanded and all of the 8 people currently on hunger strike, it is those two Palestine Action raids on facilities that, you know, have come with charges of criminal damage and alleged break-ins. You know, why is that, in your eyes, a legitimate form of activism?
Direct action is, you know, not only a legitimate and historically grounded tactic that's been used for a very long time in this country and internationally, but it's legitimate because it's effective, and because that's exactly what international law demands of the people. People don't usually don't come to direct action immediately, right? As you say, we try different methods. Speaking personally, I went to the demonstrations. I went to the sort of lobbying actions in Parliament. I met with my MP personally, actually, at the time, and he looked me in the eyes and said, there's no evidence that Israel is committing a genocide, and there's no evidence that the UK is assisting in this, you know, what you believe is a genocide. So these other sort of tactics, like demonstrations, like protesting, like lobbying MPs, have been unsuccessful because this occupation of Palestine has been happening for decades. And the Palestine Solidarity Movement in Britain has had very little to show for it, has very little to show in terms of solidarity and progress until direct action as a tactic started picking up steam. So the direct action movement for Palestine in Britain has resulted in 4 out of the 10 Elbit Systems sites being shut down. That is a tangible, material disruption to the Zionist supply chain in this country. And so this is a moral imperative, a moral obligation that regular people have taken on, because if our government is actively participating in a genocide, and we are seeing it live streamed in front of our eyes, and we know where these weapons and sort of associated companies are operating, it is our duty to disrupt them and to shut them down.
Audrey Corno and Francesca Nadin, thank you so much for your time today. So what is the government doing about all this? As the prisoners' conditions worsens, key figures ranging from their loved ones to members of parliament have contacted the Ministry of Justice and demanded they intervene. Having been left for the most part with no response, family members tried to confront the UK's Justice Secretary, David Lammy, in public.
I am a sister, one of the 100 members. We have been waiting to respond and the Minister of Justice to respond. There's 7 hunger strikers in the UK right now. They have 5 of them. We've got the letter for you. We've been waiting for a response. My brother is on now, day 25. I know. They wrote to you about October end of October. And I have been meeting to you as well, and the Minister of Justice.
1 month into the hunger strikes, Lammy claimed not to know about them, despite several MPs saying they sent letters voicing their concerns. MEE reporter Catherine Hurst spoke to several of those MPs, including MP for Coventry South, Zara Sultana.
I've written to David Lammy, so the fact that he's saying he doesn't know about this is a lie. David Lammy and the Foreign Office have been contacted about the hunger strikes, but they have also been called to question about it in Parliament. And there's also an early day motion. So any notion of the fact that they don't know about it is just a lie.
Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn also told MEE that Lammy had refused to meet with him directly.
Last week when asked in the street about the prisoners on hunger strike, he said he didn't know anything about it. I find that rather hard to believe, that the Secretary of State for Justice knows nothing about a number of prisoners under his care, in a sense, because he is the Secretary of State for Justice. A group of us, members of Parliament, have met together. All of us have constituents who are in prison, and we're now demanding a meeting of all of us with David Lammy. I just think it's pretty pathetic when a Secretary of State refuses to meet colleagues, members of Parliament colleagues, who are there to represent our constituents.
The lack of the Ministry of Justice's response prompted MPs to raise the matter in Parliament, including Labour MP John McDonnell.
I don't like doing this, Mr. Speaker, but I have to. I wrote on behalf of several members to the Secretary of State for Justice last Wednesday. It is in relation to the hunger strike that's taking place within our prisons at the moment by Palestine Action prisoners, some of whom now have been hospitalised. We wrote simply asking for a meeting with the Secretary of State. We've not received any response. I informed his office yesterday I'd be raising a point of order. We gave it another day. We still haven't had a response to that letter. This is a matter of urgency, and I would have expected at least the courtesy of some response, even if he's not willing to meet us.
In reaction, Speaker of the House of Commons Lindsay Hoyle condemned the Ministry of Justice.
I always expect ministers to take seriously correspondence from members, whichever side of the House. It is totally unacceptable. Not if I can't make a meeting happen, but I do expect people's correspondence to be dealt with quickly and effectively. What I would say is the Treasury bench, I hope, will be listening very carefully, and I hope that we'll make contact with the Honourable Member. It's not good enough. It's not acceptable. The ministerial teams need to get their act together and make sure members of Parliament, quite rightly, get a reply timely.
Some MPs have attributed the lack of meaningful response by the government to the government's relationship with Elbit Systems, the Israeli arms company at the centre of the strikers' protest. It's a company that provides around 85% of Israel's drones and land-based military equipment.
Elbit Systems are a big company, Israeli company, manufacturing weapons, and it gradually comes out more and more the number of manufacturing sites they have in Britain, the protests that have been undertaken outside them, and this very close relationship between the Ministry of Defence, other arms manufacturers in Britain, and then the final manufacture and delivery of these weapons to Israel, which are then used to bomb Gaza. What the British government is now doing is proposing to have state-built arms manufacturing facilities in Britain.
Elbit Systems factories in the UK have been repeatedly targeted with non-violent direct action by Palestine Action in what the group says is a protest against the production of weapons used in Israel's genocide in Gaza. Now, Palestine Action, as a reminder, is a proscribed group in the UK, and any support for the group is illegal. In late August, reports alleged that the UK was close to signing a £2 billion contract with Elbit Systems, a contract to train 60,000 British soldiers a year. Now, if it goes ahead, the contract would make the company's British arm a strategic partner of Britain's Ministry of Defence. It coincides with the extensive pre-trial detention of activists allegedly targeting their facilities. In the meantime, family and friends of those activists are desperately awaiting news of their loved ones. Next, we speak to Nida Jeffrey, a friend of prisoner Amu Gibb, who is now on the 38th day of their hunger strike. Nida, thank you so much for joining us at what I'm sure is a difficult time. How are you and other family and friends of the hunger strikers coping?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I kind of want to remind you that it's day 40 and not day 38 of the hunger strike. So it was kind of a daunting evening for me yesterday, waking up today and knowing that Kessa and Amu are on day 40 of their hunger strike. Yeah, it's been emotional, but also invigorating in terms of what they've done for like the movement and resistance and, you know, kind of bringing attention to the fact that it is still an ongoing genocide with Labour's complicity with, yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about Amu? How long have you known them? What are they like as a person?
Yeah, of course. Thank you for that question and humanising my friend. It's been a difficult process of getting there. Yeah, Amu and I went to sixth form together in London. And when I met Amu, I just, yeah, like I knew that they were such a special person. A lot of kind of interviews that I've given about them people always ask me, like, what got them into activism. And they make it sound like activism is some kind of a job, but it's not. It's not like a hobby. It's something that people with really good value sets and really good kind of belief systems feel compelled to do, which is exactly what I felt from AMU since the day I met them at Sixth Form and since we've been friends for years now. So yeah, they're just an amazing person. We love to like, they love food for someone who is on a hunger strike. They love food so much to the point where when we were once on a trip, we bought so much stuff that, yeah, we had to like basically get someone else to like take the train home because the like car was filled with food. And we love walking. They love hiking. Yeah, we love like long walks and talking. And they're just so amazing that even from prison, they are still kind of like, they're still trying to ask me about my life and like the very like minute details of my life and talking, you know, trying to like resource me and support me through their hunger strike. It just goes to show what an amazing person they are. And from being in touch with the loved ones of other hunger strikers, I can tell that it's such a similar case for the rest of them as well.
But how do those characteristics you've just described, how does that all fit with the descriptor that the government is now applying to Palestine Action supporters, which is terrorist?
Yeah, I think, I think it's funny that the Labour government is going after kind of protesting in this way. I feel like the Labour government is trying from all angles to hit my friend from taking away jury trials, from taking away, yeah, from like bringing in the prescription after they were imprisoned as a terrorist, which has, you know, like special powers that the government can use. I just think that it's so harmful as well, because protesters for Palestine, me being a brown Muslim woman, are usually from working class backgrounds, are usually Muslim. And although AMU is white, a lot of the protesters for Palestine, a lot of the prisoners for Palestine are brown and are Muslim. And it's so funny that we are kind of like, yeah, kind of they are labeled as terrorists, but I don't know. Yeah, like other kind of branches of activism aren't. So it's almost incredibly dangerous on that layer. But then there's also another layer of the fact that anyone who speaks up for Palestine, can be or like a direct action group can be labeled a terrorist. For someone who's just like so soft and such a like sweet person, they're not a terrorist. And it's just like the ambiguity of what terror legislations do. They can just do anything. And they're using that to silence like voices against genocide.
Have you had any communication with the government about what is happening with AMU? And what means have you tried to reach them?
Oh, it's been an uphill battle. It's been an uphill battle. Every article that you guys see in mass media has been a push, a burnout push from
the
all
recent
of us
announcement
on our laptops, like all the loved ones gathered around different people's living room, campaigning, picketing, demoing. It's been insane to it's been almost undignified to ask, you know, like politicians and loads of news outlets to care about our friends who are starving in prison when they shouldn't be in prison, when a 20-year-old like political prisoner, Kessa, shouldn't be there. It's been an uphill battle. We've had to like intercept Lamy. We've had to almost intercept Lamy at a Christmas market where he was going to, I think, turn on Christmas lights. I've had to reach out to like the Green Party, your party, local, you know, like Palestine solidarity movement. We've all had to like learn new skills of like how to create like graphics for like posters and like edit reels and like, you know, like, yeah, make leaflets and print them out. And it's just been intense, but it's been also amazing what has been achieved since Friday when we intercepted Lamy to now. The government has responded since in the morning. They have, to Jeremy Corbyn, Lammy has written to rejecting to see, Jeremy Corbyn and all the rest of the concerned MPs since. And that is expected but heartbreaking. And we're going to keep chipping away at it because Lammy has to meet us urgently.
Now, Nida, AMU has been hunger striking for nearly 6 weeks. At 6 weeks, risk of death is incredibly high. Do you want them to stop?
That's a really difficult question to answer. Obviously I would want them to stop, but I feel like they were almost left. But firstly, hunger striking is a legitimate form of protest that I think British people are just not used to, because we have a society where we are incredibly passive. And when our civil liberties are taken away to this point where, you know, you're just kind of prescribed, left in a prison, without a fair trial, redacted documents, can't work your case. All of these things, all you're left with is to use your bodies to resist. And so they're using it. And so it breaks my heart every morning, every lunch, every evening to know that my friend is in imminent threat of dying at any point. But what kind of a life is it that the British state are leaving them with? Can you think about that? Held on remand and then tried as a terrorist? What kind of a life is that? And just I don't know. Yeah, the society will just move on from that through passiveness? No.
Nida Jeffrey, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Now, before we end the show, we want to return to the core news story underpinning all of this, which is what's happening in Gaza. The final question that I put to Tuta Hoxha, who spoke to us via an intermediary from HMP Peterborough on the second month of her hunger strike and in her first broadcast interview, was this question. Did she have a message for Palestinians? Here's what she said.
I read a quote by Isabella Hamad, who says, "The present onslaught leaves no space for mourning, since mourning requires an afterwards, but only for repeated shock and the ebb and flow of grief." So this message comes in that quote-unquote afterwards. I use the term loosely because the only afterwards we recognize is at the point of a free Palestine. There are no words I can comfort you with as you search for and identify a brother, a sister, a friend in nothing but the way teeth fall into a familiar smile. But please feel reassured in our continued actions and determination. You are the focus, living and martyred. That's it.
For today, that is all that we have time for. But before we lose you, we would love to hear from you. Please send in your thoughts and questions to @MiddleEastEye on any social platform or email meelive@middleeasteye.net. We'll be here at 5 p.m. GMT, noon in New York, every Tuesday and Thursday. See you then.